Around with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, we made it past the weekend. We made it past Easter. I never found my lamb. Kind of weird. I mean, of all the times you think you could find a leg of lamb somewhere, I mean, you know, even here in the hills and hollers. Man. Yeah, that's the problem. We found a lamb and brought it home. So we did other for Easter dinner. See, it all runs together for me. I sit back here in the studio. The seasons change. Days turn into night. Night turns into days. Days turn into weeks and months and years. And I don't know. I'm kind of Rip Van Winkle back here. But that's okay. I want to share something with you just to get it started, to get things started, because it seems inappropriate to go anywhere else under the circumstances. Namely, this idea of 4,000 wasted American lives. And while some pusillanimous, panty-wasted, gutless cowards who are scared to death of being called names by repiglicans won't say it, I by God will. There are 4,000 members of the American Armed Services whose lives have been as casually thrown away as if they were utterly meaningless. Truly, truly. And it just makes me sick. I don't know how else to put it. I saw the news come out and it sort of dawned on me, and that's without mentioning, which is sinful in its own right, the losses of what? 1 million Iraqi civilians? 1 million. All on George Bush's watch, all on the hands of George Bush and Dick Cheney. And we who so vociferously oppose the war and the occupation, where are we? Michael Moore is considerably more erudite. Well, nah. He turns a prettier phrase than me. And the irony wasn't lost on him. It would have to happen on Easter Sunday, wouldn't it? The 4,000th American soldier would die in Iraq. Says Michael Moore, play me that crazy preacher again, will ya? About how maybe God in all his infinite wisdom may not exactly be blessing America these days. Is anybody surprised? 4,000 dead. Unofficial estimates are that there may be up to 100,000 wounded, injured, or mentally ruined by this war. Hey, Michael, it's occupation now, buddy, okay? And there could be up to 1 million Iraqi dead. We will pay the consequences of this for a long, long time. God will keep blessing America. And where is Darth Vader in all this? A reporter from ABC News this week told Dick Cheney in regards to Iraq, two-thirds of Americans say it's not worth fighting, and Cheney cut her off with a one-word answer. So? So? As in, so what? As in, F you, I could care less. Michael Moore says, and I agree, I would like every American to see Cheney flip the virtual bird at them, the American people. Ask yourself why we haven't risen up and thrown him and his puppet out of the White House. The Democrats, and you know, this is the tough medicine. The Democrats have had the power to literally pull the plug on this war for the past 15 months. And they have refused to do so. What are we to do about that? Continue to sink into our despair or get creative? Real creative. I know there are many of you who will see this, he says, who have the chutzpah and ingenuity to confront your local congressperson. Will you? Cheney, Michael Moore notes, spent this past Wednesday, the fifth anniversary of the war, not mourning the dead he killed, but fishing off the Sultan of Oman's royal yacht. So, Michael Moore suggests that you ask your favorite Republican what they think of that. Not a bad idea, huh? The Founding Fathers would never have uttered the presumptuous words, God bless America. That, to them, sounded like a command instead of a request, and one doesn't command God even if they are America. In fact, they were worried God would punish America during the Revolutionary War, the American Revolution. George Washington feared that God would react unfavorably against his soldiers for the way they were behaving. John Adams wondered if God might punish America and cause it to lose the war just to prove his point that America was not worthy. They and the others believed it would be arrogant on their part to assume that God would single out America for a blessing. What a long road we have traveled since then. Moore says, I see that Frontline on PBS this week has a documentary called Bush's War. He says, that's what I've been calling it for a long time. It's not the Iraq War. Iraq did nothing. Iraq didn't plan 9/11. Iraq didn't plan September the 11th, 2001. Sorry, that's a new grammatical thing. We just don't know. 9/11's what you call an emergency or a really nifty car that you buy if you can afford one. It didn't have the weapons of mass destruction. It did have movie theaters and bars and women wearing what they wanted and a significant Christian population and one of the few Arab capitals with an open synagogue. That's all gone now. Show a movie, you'll be shot in the head. Over 100 women have been randomly executed for not wearing a scarf. He says, I'm happy as a blessed American that I had a hand in all this. I just paid my taxes, so that means I helped to pay for this freedom we've brought to Baghdad. So? Will God bless me? Will God bless us? Fishing. Fishing. Off the yacht of the Sultan of Oman. From email, rats. Too damn bad he was fishing. If he'd been hunting, he could have shot another repiglican in the face. Yeah, but they didn't tell you the story about when he went to cast and he got the barb of his hook caught in the Sultan's skirt. Well, that's a pathetic attempt at humor, isn't it? Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I got a bad feeling about tonight. So we've passed the 4,000th anniversary. What do we get? We get this. From that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout that we didn't elect in the first place.
President Bush, Monday, said U.S. deaths in Iraq had, quote, "it laid the foundations for peace for generations to come. I have vowed in the past, and I will vow, so long as I'm president, to make sure that those lives were not lost in vain."
Really?
Said it during a visit to the State Department. Here, show me that button you push when you want to see, Barack Osama's passport stuff. I want to see it too.
These are the statistics as they exist, and we understand them. Of the 4,000 U.S. military personnel killed in the war, 3,263 have been killed in attacks and fighting, and 737 in non-hostile incidents, such as traffic accidents and suicides, and getting electrocuted trying to take a damn shower because Kellogg Burn and Loot couldn't competently wire a building. Of course, that's what you get when you use non-union labor. Far be it from me to point that out, but it is non-union labor doing the work in Iraq. So there was a briefing with reporters today, and White House spokes-twit Dana Perino said that the president definitely feels the loss, you know? Definitely. Dana Perino. Hillary Clinton said, "I want to take a moment to note yesterday's heartbreaking news that 5 years after the start of the war, there have been 4,000 U.S. military deaths in Iraq. Tens of thousands of our brave men and women have also suffered serious wounds, both visible and invisible, to their bodies, their minds, and their hearts. As president, I intend to honor the extraordinary service and sacrifice of them and their families by ending this war and bringing them home as quickly and responsibly as possible." Senator Obama had comments as well on what he called a grim milestone. He said that each death is a tragedy, and we honor every fallen American and send our thoughts and prayers to their family. It is past time to end this war that should never have been waged by bringing our troops home and finally pushing Iraq's leaders to take responsibility for their future. And all that that moron can say is that Iraq has as a foundation for peace for generations to come, that foundation is built on the spilled, wasted blood of 4,000 men and women, of 4,000 fathers, mothers, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, classmates, neighbors, pals. And that he'll make sure they didn't die in vain. You hateful bastard. You sorry, rotten, miserable, pathetic, imbecilic, hateful little bastard, you. They died in vain, and they died in vain at your command. And yet it is worth remembering, is it not, that he said it's a romantic war, and if I was a younger man, I think I'd sign up and fight myself. Listen, buddy. There are American men as old as you who are serving there now. Stand not upon the order of your going, George, but go at once. Turn the reins over to Dick Cheney. He's had him in his teeth the whole damn time anyway. And suit up and go. Walk the streets of Baghdad. Walk the streets of Fallujah. And you know what, George? If you do that, and you happen to come home feet first, we'll treat you just like we've treated every single American death in Iraq. We won't cover your arrival home at Dover Air Base. We'll take your body off the plane with a goddamn forklift. And the president will not attend your funeral. And we'll talk about how your life was not given in vain. Put the uniform on, George! Show us some of that romance you were talking about. Get with it. You got nothing left to do with the rest of your presidency. America's economy's in the toilet. We don't make anything here because all the jobs are gone to China. Sign up, George. You're the commander in chief. You can write yourself your own excuse. You can write your own pass. You can get yourself right into the war. You know, your little right-wing acolytes like to compare you to Winston Churchill. Well, here's a little news flash for you, George. When Winston Churchill left office during the First World War, he put the uniform of His Majesty's Army on and went to the trenches of France. Go, George! Go! But you, George, don't have the guts. You're a coward, George. You're a chicken-hearted, yellow-bellied, lily-livered piece of crap. And you don't have the stomach to fight the wars you start. That is for someone else. That's for some kid from the barrio, or the holler, or the inner city streets. Not for American royalty like you consider yourself to be. Might actually think a little better of you, George, if you'd man up and go. But you won't. You won't. No, left for you is the curse of history and the curse of Shakespeare, who pretty well defined your future. A coward dies a thousand deaths. And you live in perpetual cowardice, you sick, murderous, criminal freak. Your thoughts? Your thoughts on 4,000 deaths in 5 years? Your hopes? Your ideas for the future are welcome. You know the phone number. 304-658-3333. If you need us to carry the freight, we'll be more than happy to do so. That number is 877-443-2366. We'll be right back. This is The Horn.
I've been thinking lately about the people I meet. The car wash on the corner and the hole in the street. The way my ankles hurt with shoes on my feet. And I'm wondering if I'm gonna see tomorrow. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. I was in the army, but I never dug a trench. Used to bust my knuckles on a monkey wrench. I go to town and drink, give the girls a pinch, but I don't think they ever even notice me. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. Fish and whistle, a whistle and fish. Eat everything that they put on your dish. And when we get through, we'll make a big wish that we never have to do this again. Again, again. Oh, my very first job, I said thank you and please. They made me scrub a parking lot down on my knees. Then I got fired for being scared of bees. And they only give me 50 cents an hour. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. Fish and a whistle and fish. Eat everything that they put on your dish. And when we get through, we'll make a big wish that we never have to do this again. Again. Again, oh, Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. We'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. We'll whistle and go fishing in heaven.
I got to tell you, I started thinking that song came to me when I saw the line about Dick Cheney fishing. Not that I've got anything against fishing. You know, you give a man a fish and you fed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, and you've given him an excuse to sit by the river with a beer in his hand for the rest of his life. On the other hand, give a man religion, and he'll starve to death praying for a fish. Let's see. Oh, why not? Oh, they quit on me. Too bad. No, I think about the number 4,000, what it means. How far would 4,000 bodies stretched end to end extend? Use a rough average of 6 feet, just for the fun of it. Well, that would be 24,000 feet. That would be 5 miles. A little less. 5 miles. That's from here up to the main road. 5 miles. One mile per year. Of course, the statistics don't indicate that it breaks down anything nearly like that. No, it turns out that it's more like, well, here's how it shakes out. Way over 90% of the deaths in this hateful occupation happened after George Bush put on his codpiece and his junior flyboy suit and landed on the deck of the Abraham Lincoln that had been turned in such a way as to keep America from seeing that it was within sight of San Diego, from whence he could have easily helicoptered. And declared mission accomplished. Way over 90%. And the longer the war goes on, the closer to 99% that number will get. War, I did it myself. The Iraqupation goes on, the closer that number will get. To 99. By the way, I read you the statements, or partial statements, of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama on the sad little milestone. You know, 1,000 or 4,000 doesn't mean much to the person for whom the only death was the one that came with news to their home. There's an old saying that misery loves company, but not in this case, because the Grim Reaper is company enough. Again, Barack Obama said, and I quote, "It is with great sadness that we have reached another grim milestone in Iraq, with at least 4,000 of our finest Americans having been killed. Each death is a tragedy, and we honor every fallen American and send our thoughts and prayers to their families. It is past time to end this war that should never have been waged by bringing our troops home and finally pushing Iraq's leaders to take responsibility for their future. As we do, we must serve the memory of all who have died as well as they served our country by providing support for their families, caring for our troops and veterans, and upholding the American values which our fallen heroes exemplified through their service." And Hillary Clinton said 5 years after the start of the war in Iraq, "There have been now 4,000 U.S. military deaths in Iraq. On this solemn day, we remember the sacrifice of our brave men and women in uniform. We honor the tens of thousands more who have suffered wounds, both visible and invisible, wounds that scar bodies and minds and hearts as well. We honor the sacrifices of their families, a price paid in empty places at the dinner table, in the struggle to raise children alone, in the wrenching reversal of parents burying children. In the last 5 years, our soldiers have done everything we asked of them and more. They were asked to remove Saddam Hussein from power and bring him to justice, and they did. They were asked to give, well, see, I got a break there. They grabbed him, all right. They pulled him out of the hidey hole. But if you think what Saddam Hussein got was anything approaching justice, turning him over to a Shia lynch mob, Oh, go ask the Iraqis. They'll tell you. Our soldiers were asked to give the Iraqi people the opportunity for free and fair elections, and they did. They were asked to give the Iraqi government the space and time for political reconciliation, and they did. So for every American soldier who has made the ultimate sacrifice for this mission, we should imagine carved in stone, they gave their life for the greatest gift one can give to a fellow human being, the gift of freedom. She goes on to say, I recall the great honor of meeting many of our brave women and men who have served our country. In meeting them, I'm always struck by how, no matter how great the suffering, no matter how grave their own injuries, they always say the same thing to me. Promise me that you'll take care of my buddies. They're still over there. Promise you'll keep them safe. I have looked at those men and women in the eye. I have made that promise, and I intend to honor by bringing a responsible end to this war and bringing our troops home safely. Now, those are the two statements from Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Plain enough, right? Well, yeah, but there's something missing. Not missing from Obama's or Clinton's statements, of course, but there's one other person we haven't heard from, and that's John McShane, the McCain-Churian candidate. He has remained silent. And, you know, in a way, under when you consider his position, it's almost as though he's been read his Miranda rights. You know, the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you. Because considering the fact that he's A-OK with 4,000 wasted lives in the sands of Iraq, and would be OK with 8,000, he'd be OK with 12,000, he'd be OK with 16,000, or 160,000 dead Americans in the sands of Iraq. John McShane just doesn't have much to say today, and he has not issued a statement. Well, I take that back. He did issue a statement today. But not about the 4,000th soldier to be wasted in Iraq. Or even dying for freedom in Iraq. Nip! The statement that the McCain campaign issued today was about elections in Taiwan. No, really. I wish I was pulling your leg. I'm not. With the news breaking yesterday, Easter Sunday, that we had lost our 4,000th soldier, sailor, airman, marine, John McCain's office used today, Monday, the beginning of the week, to pontificate about elections in Taiwan. Wow. I wish I was making that up. But I'm not. On the other hand, there are places that are a little bit like John McCain. Places that think the Iraqipation is just groovy. It's the bee's knees. It's neato. It's keen. It's hip. It's happening. It's cool. One of those places is the American Enterprise Institute. They had an event featuring a guy from the Brookings Institute by the name of Michael O'Hanlon. Chicken Hawks, Fred Kagan, and Ken Pollock were also there. And they, you know, they think it's just neat, this war, that they don't have to fight. And it was positively insane. You gotta hear this to really, really get a feel for just how nuts it is. Because it is all kinds of crazy. I'll leave it to you to decide.
I think those of you who remember remember the Bush administration coming into office 8 years ago. I remember the term that was coined to describe a lot of the foreign policy advisors of that group, the Vulcans. And I feel honored to be among two people who I would say make up a different group. I'm still searching for the right word, but I want to call them the Lombardis of this war, because they've done two things.
The Lombardis of this war. Me, I'd suggest that they were the Lombardos of this war. You know, Guy Lombardo, Auld Lang Syne. No, this guy said that. Whew. They're digging deep for their analogies now, aren't they? Lombardis? He's describing Fred Kagan and Ken Pollack. The Lombardis of the war. Let's find out why they're Lombardis of the war, if you don't mind.
Lombardis of this war, because they've done two things, and in addition to Fred and Ken, who have been two of the most important people, Andy Krepinevich is another important think tanker, retired General Jack Keane from the outside, a small group of people inside the administration, smaller than it should have been, but people like Megan O'Sullivan, and a small but important group of people inside the military like Dave Petraeus and General Corelli. These people did two things that I think would have made Vince Lombardi proud. One, they stuck with it. And they persevered through difficult times. And two, they stayed focused on fundamentals. And the fundamentals always said, if you deployed a substantial enough number of American forces and juxtaposed that with a sound political strategy, you should have a good chance in this sort of a situation. And I think they've been vindicated, even though we all know we are not out of the woods.
You know what? You look at Michael O'Hanlon, and I could swear he's probably young enough the Army would take him. Now, Pollack and Kagan, not so much. One's a little too round, one's probably a little too old. But gee whiz, can we not have done with football and basketball and baseball analogies in regard to this blood fest? Please, it ain't a football game. Football games end in an allotted period of time. There is a clearly delineated winner and a clearly delineated loser. And whoever said that Vince Lombardi was such an idiot that he would continue to do a stupid thing even after it was proven that the thing he was doing was stupid? Vince Lombardi was an intelligent man. And, you know, he's the guy who said run to daylight. In other words, you know, if I send in off tackle, and that ain't where the daylight is, go where daylight is. Get yards. Make progress. Don't just run the play to be running the play. But no. In the world that Michael O'Hanlon lives in, apparently, if you're running a dive play, you're running a dive play, and you hit that hole, whether the entire defense is standing in it, ready to cream your ass, hit the hole. Don't run to daylight. Don't change tactics. Don't smarten up. Don't learn from your mistakes. Don't stop doing a stupid thing just because it's stupid. The Vulcans. Is there anybody who's ever watched Star Trek that thinks planning the Iraq War has anything to do with how a Vulcan would behave? What was logical? Logic is, of course, you know, within the Star Trek universe thing, logic is the god of the Vulcans. Reason, common sense. Where is the logic? Where is the reason? Where is the common sense in 4,000 dead Americans perhaps as many as 100,000 crippled, wounded, broken, battered, and beaten Americans, and nearly a million Iraqi dead. Where's the common sense in it? Where was the common sense in the eradication of one of the oldest Christian sects in Christendom? Where was the common sense in the eradication of a secular society? Where was the logic in shattering Iraq so that Shia could hate Sunni and Sunni could hate Shia and formerly integrated neighborhoods could be broken up and Balkanized? I suppose these are rhetorical questions. These two people did two things that I think would have made Vince Lombardi proud. They stuck with it, and they persevered through difficult times. Now, see, Michael O'Hanlon, difficult times are when you are asked to do your laundry and shower and shave with filthy water, when you have to live in 100-degree heat on a liter of water a day that you can sweat out in 10 minutes in full kit. Those are difficult times. When every single human being you see could be friend or could be foe. When death lurks around every corner. And if you survive to make it home, you get fed filthy food provided by Halliburton. When your transportation vehicles are not armored sufficiently to provide protection against blasts. Michael O'Hanlon, those are difficult times. Having your stupid ideas held up and subjected to ridicule and scrutiny, well, that's just the price you pay for being an idiot, Michael O'Hanlon. Okay, I mean, can we separate this into, you know, using reality as a sort of a sieve? Can we separate all this out so that we know who the Vince Lombardis are and are not? And here we sit. You, me, we, us. And we are nearly full 8 years into George Bush's presidency. We are full 5 years into his war and occupation. And here we sit. 76% of the American people want the hell out of Iraq, think it was a mistake, think it wasn't worth doing in the first place. Some of those have changed their minds. Some of us are proud members of the reality-based community, and we were part of that group when it was 9%, 10%, 12%, 16%, 20%, 25%. And we knew, and we kept talking. And we told friends, and we told neighbors. Meanwhile, these people still sit in their little echo chambers, telling each other that they have persevered, that they are somehow winning something. And John Yoo issues a statement. Not John Yoo, John McCain. John McCain issues a statement about voting in Taiwan. Whew. Weird place, this America. Strange place to live in. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
I just have a real fast question.
Okay.
Those guys from that, that were talking.
Oh, from the non-think tank?
Yeah. When did they graduate from the war college?
Oh, when did they graduate from... No, I mean, they didn't. I mean, they're just, you know, geniuses. They're just native geniuses.
Yeah, right. I could say something, but I won't. I think the really, really depressing thought besides the 4,000 mark, it's going to keep on.
Sure. It by next year, it may be 5,000.
Yeah. And you right-wing idiots, you have no idea of the whirlwind you are sowing. But you will find it. You will find it. And when it hits, do not cry to us. We tried to warn you.
And...
It will come.
But they don't care. Susan, they don't care. And until they are removed from power by almost any means necessary, preferably peaceful and legal.
Oh, yeah.
They're planning, they really are. They're trying to figure out a way to do Iran.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's my other nightmare.
Of course, John Conyers has said, if they do Iran, there will be impeachment hearings.
He better follow through on it.
No. The thing that John Conyers doesn't understand is that you prevent them from doing Iran by impeaching them over Iraq.
Personally, I like that idea better.
I do, too.
I like the idea of preventing the whole thing by impeaching them over the shredding of the Constitution.
Well, we're not going to get... That's probably a little too esoteric.
Yeah, I know.
But... I wish November was here. And then sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
Because...
One thing I've noticed.
What?
Okay, I know Obama has said this. I'm pretty sure Hillary has, but I haven't seen the actual clips. But I'm pretty sure she more or less said she's going to support habeas corpus, da-da-da-da-da. And I know Obama has. But all I have been able to find out on this subject from McCain is a deafening silence.
That's all you get. That's all you're going to get from McShane.
Uh-huh. Which...
He wants... See, he's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
His mind turned to mush during those years in the Hanoi Hilton. He is not screwed down. He wasn't very sharp to begin with, and the POW years didn't help. And now he wants those powers because he wants to use them. He's a danger to American freedom. He's a danger to world peace.
Oh yeah.
And he's a danger to our future. Again, he doesn't care if it's 4,000 or 400,000 dead from Iraq. It's all the same to him.
He's a scary dude.
Pardon?
He is one scary dude.
I guess, you know, but look, he doesn't have to issue a statement on the 4,000th death. Because his pals, like Chris Matthews, are not going to call him on it. You know, maybe Olbermann will. So what? Only liberals watch him.
That's another thing that really bothers me, is the past they're giving him. There's one host on MSNBC that's taken to calling him Teflon John.
Yeah, because nothing will stick to him.
Yeah, and he seems to be the only one that's saying, hey, why is everybody giving this dude a pass? But at the same time, he does it too.
I wish I had an answer. But
so do I.
Well, no, we do have an answer. He's going to get the same kid gloves preferential treatment that every Repig-licking candidate gets.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a national professional media that asked the candidates when there were a bunch of them if they think Reagan would have endorsed them.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, over on the Democratic side of things, during those pageants, they were asking questions that were designed to make each candidate, make Hillary and Barack come out of their shoes wanting to fight each other.
Mm-hmm. And asking the intelligent candidates things like UFO questions.
Yeah, there was that, too.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I mean...
I'm going to let you go.
All right. Thanks, Susan. Take care.
You love to Agnes.
All right, will do. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Don't expect any... Well, but you don't. Well, meanwhile, speaking of... you know, I've heard, because it's been rerun a few times, Guy James ran the Obama speech from last week in its entirety. And there's a line in that speech where he talks about radio personalities and talk show hosts who have made a career out of fostering hate. And there is an element of truth in it. This past Friday, the chief among those, Flush Flemball, the oxymoron, the dope junkie, the guy who sent his maid out with cigar boxes full of cash so she could return with cigar boxes full of OxyContin, declared that, that Barack Obama had, and this is a quote, disowned his white half by, I don't know, not slitting the throat of Jeremiah Wright. This is what he said.
This is the stuff, my friends. This is the part that might bother some of you. It is clear that Senator Obama has disowned his white half. He's decided he's got to go all in on the black side.
No, really. He did. He has to go all in on the black side. Now, I don't know about you, but like I said, I've had several opportunities to listen to that speech in toto. Now, the speech I was listening to had Barack Obama clearly addressing issues of race, racism, and yes, classism. Because he specifically referenced white folks who don't feel like they've gotten any special breaks. Because their people came here as immigrants and have worked their way to whatever it is they have. And yet, he's disowned his white half. How do you do that? How do you disown half of a chromosome pair? Never mind the fact that the white skin gene is probably, you know, one out of... How many genes are there on a chromosome? And there are how many chromosome pairs in the human... Yeah, you get it. I mean, color of skin and color of eyes are probably about equally important in the grand scheme of making a human being. But no, in the hateful, filthy, right-wing world that Flush Flembaugh lives in, Barack Obama has a white half and a black half. Like he's got a little line running right down his face, right down the bridge of the nose, through the middle of the mouth, the middle of the chin, and, you know, white hand, black hand. White foot, black foot. And he gets away with it. And he's a big part of the problem. I picked up the telephone because, you know, I'm the phone guy during Mark Levin's show. And some freak was calling wanting to talk to Mark Levin. Now, you know, Mark Levin is a second-tier right-wing hate-monger, and he's big pals with Flush. If you ever hear him, it'll turn your stomach. It'll put you off food for a couple of days. Mark Levin is so far up Rush Limbaugh's rear end that when Rush Limbaugh yawns, you can see Mark Levin's face. And this guy calls wanting to talk to Mark Levin, and I had to explain. And it happens all the time, by the way. Had to explain to him because I have no time for these freaks. And I said, no, this is the Mark Levin show. This is the Radio Inside Scoop. Mark Levin is a hateful right-wing gas bag. And he said something to object, and I said, listen, if you're a right-winger and a conservative, you're part of the problem in this country, and I'm not going to waste my time on you. Get stuffed. And I hung up. Because I really don't have time for him anymore. They have screwed up America beyond our wildest imagination of their ability to do so. And yet every time we think that they've done as much as they can, they do something else. So, you know, I'm just not nice to him anymore. I'm sorry, Mark. I mean, maybe one of these days I'll just sneak him onto the air and just tell Mark, you know, you've got a right-wing freak here. You want to talk to him? But for me, I wouldn't. I wouldn't waste my time on them. Because they have nothing to offer. They're contentious and cantankerous, and above all, generally stupid. I do not consider them my fellow Americans. I do not consider them part of our attempt to make America a better place, because they want an America that is a continually worse place. So as far as I'm concerned, they can go to hell. All of them. Every last one. I have no time for people who don't recognize what problems we have. Because you know what? We've got problems in this country. We've got trouble in this country. And if we don't solve it and solve it soon, there's not going to be a whole lot of hope. At least as far as I can tell. So we've made it through an hour. We'll take a little interlude here. You know the phone number, 304-658-3333. Toll free, 877-443-2366. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
I'm trying to keep up with you. It's hard enough when you speak clearly. When you're confused, it's like a good stream running through these rooms. And I'm reading more into your words than you have put into them. And that's my problem, that you tie these knots now you undo them. You undo them. Oh, think before you speak, my darling. 'Cause with your troubled mind, you're like a good stream running through my life. With your troubled mind, you're like a good stream.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, let's start off hour number two with a little bit of fire. What do you say? I just got this email, it just rolled in, from someone who apparently listens to the show and has nothing better to do with their life than do so. I won't give this person's name, but I might as well share this with you, because it's interesting. I seldom get this kind of thing. Subject: you! All caps. Why? You! You want to know why I don't subscribe to your show? Well, mainly because we don't sell subscriptions, moron. Really? No, didn't ask you. Here's why. 'Cause you are a blustering downer. 'Cause you are condescending and self-righteous.
because it's your way or the highway.
And for those of you who call this program, this person who calls, I don't have a last name or anything, just Laura.
90% of your callers are 90% the same crowing sycophants every single day.
Andy said it best last week.
Why am I still listening? You ask.
No, I didn't.
It's like watching or listening to a train wreck. Oh, for the days of Agnes. When she produced your show, you were worth supporting.
I'll show her this. I'm sure she'll be very happy to hear that. Of course, part of the reason she left the studio was because of the crap that she had to put up with from hateful people.
I support Guy James. He still got his head screwed on straight. I rest my case.
What case? There was no case. We don't send a bill. And this network is not just this show. It's Mark Levine. It's Peter Godbold. You got it. Have I ever said this is anything but conversation radio? Calls are answered in the order they arrive. And unlike most places, I won't run someone for not, you know, spilling it all out in 30 seconds. Okay, I got it here. Yeah. Coming to the headonradionetwork.com website, because we are expanding and growing every day. A forum, more like, you know, message boards, so that you can call in and type things like, oh, what was it, a blustering downer? I'm sorry, Laura. Want me to get on here and giggle? Huh, damn. We lost our 4,000th soldier. That's so funny. Jesus, I tell you what, I don't know what to do. That's so funny. I don't care who you are. That's funny. 4,000 dead soldiers. Train wreck? Hardly. You name me anywhere else that gives people an opportunity to express themselves fully and completely. I'll tell you a little secret. It doesn't exist. Outside of the horn, whether it's Guy or me, John, Peter, Mark, you get your say. Unless you just want to hide and you don't have the nerve to do it, you know, on air. But you know what, Laura? We've made it so far without you. I'm guessing we'll continue. I am a blustering downer. How am I blustering? I mean, I know I can be a downer. But I don't know about the blustering part. Sycophants? The people who pick up the phone and call the program are sycophants? Why are they sycophants, Laura? Because they don't share your views? What views are they not expressing that you want expressed? You want to hear somebody fight? Is that it? Is this just... Is the conversation nothing more to you than some sort of... reality program where you're waiting to see who gets bloodied up? There's plenty of that on terrestrial radio. Go listen to Michael Savage, Laura. Or better yet, call Michael Savage. See how well you're treated there. Try to get a word in edgewise with Flush Flimball. Try to espouse a progressive or a liberal viewpoint. Good luck with all that. And you know what? Don't email again. I'll just set you to delete. This email comes in. Tell Laura to get some brass and call in. We all want to hear what she has to say. But she won't because she's a coward. I remember Laura. We've had some nice conversations. I don't know why she... Yeah, see, this is what's happening. We are coming unstuck, unglued, as we move toward November. Because the Obama people are bananas against the Hillary people, and the Hillary people are bananas against the Obama people, and nobody can keep their eye on John McCain. But, you know, I do, you know, from time to time, get up. You know, I've tried to more or less give up carrying on, hollering and so forth. Seems counterproductive. And I'd like to have discussion. I'd like to have dialogue. I'd like to focus on the problem. John McCain is the problem. Another problem we focus on is, I'm sorry, it happens to be close to me because it's close to me. What's being done to the place where we're raising our children? But I guess that's just bluster, isn't it? Just faking it. It's not real. You're not really blowing up mountains around here, are they, Laura? It's just bluster. I guess. Weird. Some people. All right, we'll go to the phones. Oh, somebody gave up. Let's try this one. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, I'm up here.
Hey, Alan, what's up? I'm doing okay. How about you?
Pretty good. I'm almost to Washington, D.C. I'll be here tomorrow.
Oh, you're on the road again.
Oh, no. I'm just in my personal vehicle. I'm going up to get some paintings that didn't sell, and I'm going to just take my time going back, just enjoying it.
Good.
I just wish I had the right bumper stickers for my vehicle.
What are you looking for?
I want to get one that says Free Don Siegelman. I think there's one just come out. I just need to give some money to an organization that give me one.
I tell you, the Don Siegelman story is getting a little bit of traction, Alan, but not nearly as much as it needs. When I read the other day that the man is being abused in prison, it made me sick. He shouldn't even be there. If he's going to go, he should be awaiting to go pending his appeal like everybody else gets a chance at. Most other cases of this nature, even if the guy is guilty of sin, he stays out pending his appeal.
Oh, yeah, I knew that part. I didn't know that he was being abused in prison.
I can't remember where I read it, but it was a week or so ago, a little more than a week. Somebody who was a personal friend of his that had a message gotten out to him. You know, the guy can't even have stationery. It's like he's on Devil's Island or on the moon or something.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah, it is. Especially. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a question to ask you because I have, I don't read the news as much as you do. But is it true that John McCain said the other day that he made a statement that he doesn't know the difference between Sunni and Shia.
Well, he didn't say he doesn't know the difference so much as he showed that he doesn't know the difference. He said that Iran was training Sunni insurgents. And Joe Lieberman had to whisper in his ear and straighten him up.
Oh, man. If they want him to be president.
Somebody does. It ain't me.
And then we got Dick Cheney over there in Israel. Seems like he's trying to drum up a war against Iran.
Sure, that
he's
was...
He's trying to act like a peacemaker first.
Well, I don't know that he's acting like a peacemaker. He's had meetings with King Abdullah and, like I said, went fishing with the Sultan of Oman. Nice.
Uh-huh. I couldn't believe it. I think the leader of Hamas shook his hand.
I missed that part.
He was on the BBC. I think that was he was shaking his hand. I couldn't believe that. That's a man. He's trying to drum up another war, but he's never... He got like 7 deferments to get out of Vietnam.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But that's okay. Somebody else can go and fight and die.
Yeah, that's the way they like it. What the poor people do. And also, I have another question to ask you about the banks that were bailed out recently for their bad loans. Is it true that those banks were greatly funded by the Saudis, Saudi oil?
That I don't know. It wouldn't be. They're heavily invested in everything here now. So if they had a position inside the Bear Stearns, it wouldn't surprise me in the least.
But wouldn't that be ironic?
I don't know if it's ironic so much as infuriating, but I get your point.
Yeah. I guess that's been all I had to say, but that Sigelman case is pretty important. I think I need to...
Carolyn Kay suggested on Friday, and I agree with her, that something needs to be said very clearly, sort of on the down low on the QT to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Namely,
yes.
The day you take the oath of office, that man gets out.
Uh-huh.
And the criminal
investigation.
Right up now. There are some investigations underway in Congress, but again, Congress can't free a man that a judge has sent to prison. The only thing Congress could do would be to start impeachment proceedings against the judge. And that's not going to get Don Siegelman out of the stir.
And the judge was was a Republican who was head of the re-election campaign or somehow...
Well, he had worked in campaigns directly against Don Siegelman.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, so he had a direct conflict of interest and wanted to use his position of power. In other words, he behaved like Republicans behave.
Well, just that right there should be a case to retry, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, you would. And there is, understand there is an appeal underway.
Uh-huh.
But the appeal, the prosecutor in the case recently briefed the court and claimed that Siegelman should not be let out of prison pending appeal because he hadn't shown a likelihood of, a substantial likelihood of prevailing on his appeal. And that was before the circuit court in Atlanta.
Did you watch that 60 Minutes a few weeks ago?
Oh, yeah, I saw it.
They're pretty good.
It was, it was 12 minutes long. There's not a lot you can do in 12 minutes. Frankly, Don Siegelman's case should get, an hour? 2 hours?
Yeah. I imagine Democracy Now! Has covered it a lot better than that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it was blocked out in Huntsville, Alabama. I guess you heard about that.
Yeah, I did. It was, well, not just Huntsville, over all of North Alabama. Now, they did rerun it about the same time that, about the same time they were doing the Best Actor Award or Best Picture Award on the Academy Awards, they reran it. But this is this Scott Horton, who has covered it extensively for Harper's, was on Mark Levine's show, and he made it abundantly clear there's nothing new in this. This is, you know, way back in the days of the civil rights struggle, TVs would block their signal whenever the network did stories on civil rights or Dr. King. Black it out. So, yeah, complete and total media management.
And finally, they got this TV station in Jackson, Mississippi, fined for it or something like that. I heard about that Harper's article. I need to read that.
Most bits and pieces of it are online, but you need to get hold of the hard copy. You know, the hard copy of the magazine to really get everything that Scott Horton's done.
Yeah. I have a relative. I've got to get a relative to watch that 60 Minutes, and I said it's be about Don Siegelman's case, and she said, what is it about get out of jail for free case? That's what she said to me. That's the kind of relatives I have.
Oh, brother. You have my pity.
Sometimes I just like to stay out of town.
Sometimes it sounds like maybe you oughta.
Yeah.
Alan's good to talk to you. You drive, you know, enjoy your trip, and, you know, this one's on your time, so enjoy it.
Hey, thank you.
All right, take care. Bye now. It's our buddy Alan calling from the road. Getting near D.C., he said. Now, onward and upward. Other things. You know, last week, I guess it would be a week ago last Friday, a magistrate, a U.S. magistrate, he's the guy that's one step down below a U.S. district judge, ordered the White House to show why they should not preserve all of their hard drives in the case of the missing email. Well, it turns out via an Associated Press report that the White House has said that, those old hard drives just aren't there anymore. They've been destroyed. Because, see, we try to replace one-third of all the computers in the White House every year, so that we've constantly got new equipment, and we just send everything off-site, and it's destroyed off-site. The White House went on to say that a proposed email recovery plan that the federal magistrate had put forward would be worthless. The exact language from the White House, quote, when workstations are at the end of their life cycle and retired, the hard drives are generally sent off-site to another government entity for physical destruction. I don't think that's quite Hoyle. I don't think it's quite legal. But then again, since when has, you know, business like legality ever been any kind of bar to the White House? Oh, and we started the program with Michael Moore's comments about Dick Cheney and his statement of so, you know, 76% of the American people want us out of Iraq. So, well, unlike John McCain, Dick Cheney had something to say about the 4,000 lives lost. What did he say? You're going to love this. They volunteered. How low can these people go? God, I hope I'm not blustering. The president carries the biggest burden, obviously. He's the one who has to make the decision to commit young Americans. But we're fortunate to have a group of men and women, the all-volunteer force, who voluntarily put on the uniform and go in harm's way for the rest of us. Not going for me, Dick. I don't have any shares in any oil companies whatsoever. I don't have any stock in Halliburton or KBR. My freedom is not on the line in the Middle East. The president carries the biggest burden, obviously. Gee, sorry, Mom, you just buried your kid. The president carries the biggest burden, obviously. Hey, little girl, little boy, Daddy ain't coming home. Too bad for you. He volunteered. The president carries the biggest burden, obviously. When you talk about an all-volunteer force, some of these soldiers, airmen, Marines, have been on two, three, or... Yeah. Question from Martha Raddatz. This is an ABC interview. Cheney's response, a lot of men and women sign up because sometimes they will see developments. For example, 9/11 stimulated a lot of folks to volunteer for the military because they wanted to be involved in defending the country. A lot of people signed up after September 11th, 2001, because they wanted to defend the country. Dick, do you think they wanted to defend the country, buddy, against the people? And please, let's not talk about defense. Defense is what you do before the planes are hitting the buildings, okay? That's where the defense happens. Anything after the planes have hit the building is called, Dick, revenge. It's called retribution. It's called vendetta. That's not defending the country, Dick. Especially when you're doing it to, you know, a country that didn't do anything to you. After all, it's worth remembering that that attacking Iraq after September 11th, 2001 is roughly the equivalent of bombing Chile after December 7th, 1941. There's no connection. None at all. But, you know, Dick Cheney, screw them. They volunteered, right? Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Well, we got brown skies in North Dakota.
Now, you're going to have to speak up a little bit, Bob. I don't have the best of connections here.
Hey,
brown skies?
Yeah, you remember the dirty 30s?
Yeah, Dust Bowl, all of that stuff.
Yeah, we got brown skies in North Dakota. Well, it's not quite brown skies. It's brown everything else. And then you look up and you got blue skies above. Yeah, we got the same thing going on right now. And it's, what, April?
Not quite, but be soon.
Ooh. Oh, it's March yet. My goodness, there's supposed to be snow on the ground. No, we got no snow. It's dry, and we have wind 60 miles an hour ripping things up and dirt flying through the air. They call it dust. what do you call them? Tumbleweeds out of Montana and Canada coming down here. It looked like buzzing fast now. I'm looking out the west window of my house, and I'm watching something I have never seen in my lifetime, but I have seen photos of it from the 30s, and they call it the Dirty 30s, the Dust Bowl, and what they have after the Dust Bowl, huh?
What is it, well, what does it look like?
It looks like hell on earth. Excuse me. I said it looks like hell on earth.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, is it just a cloud of dust? I've never seen I've never seen one of these things. I've heard about them, but never seen them.
Yeah, it comes in waves, like ocean waves, okay? But it's dust, and it's blowing hard, and we got, you know, it's ripping stuff off the roof of the barn. I'm watching the parts of the barn being just ripped apart by this horrendous wind and dust. And Amanda was coming home tonight. She says she was coming from south, going north, and she said it sounded like there was sand hitting the side of her car. And it was just ripping at it, you know. And it's strange because Bob, our planet is being changed. The weather is being changed. We're going back in a part of history that no one wants to talk about. We talk about politics. We talk about that they caught a Democrat having heterosexual sex with a female that was over the age of 21. And oh my God, it's a big story, right?
Yeah, and the guy had to quit his job.
Yeah, and he had to quit his job because, oh my goodness, they blew it all out of proportion. But, Bob, we're sitting here, and I'm watching something that I cannot believe is happening. I'm looking at it. The clouds are brown, I mean, from the west. And I can see blue sky, but it keeps changing. Every moment I'm watching these gusts of sand and dust being blown up. I'm watching a pheasant rooster out here on the road right now, running around in circles as if he's trying to find himself. It's strange, and it is eerie. It is the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. And, Bob, I've told you about weird stuff I've seen in places I've been, but this is uncanny. And I'm scared. This is creepy.
Well, I think you've got a right to be a little bit nervous about it, because it doesn't take a lot to take a lot of people, Bob, don't think about prosaic stuff like topsoil. I know you do.
I do. Because guess what, Bob? All right. Everybody likes their, what do you call that, Burger King or McDonald's burger, right?
Yeah, sure.
And you need a couple of ingredients for that burger at Burger King, and you need something to put that meat on, right? And, you know, if you don't have any grass to feed to the cattle, and we are cattle country up here, not just oil country. We have cattle, big cattle country, right?
Yeah.
We raise cattle, and those cattle are ground up into hamburger, and the hamburgers are put on the buns, but we also raise something else.
A whole lot of wheat.
And the wheat is made into flour, and the flour is made into bread, and the bread is made into buns, and you put the meat on the... And so, guess what, folks? We're looking at something I can't believe. If we go into another Dust Bowl era, it won't be just the tens of thousands that are dying in Iraq. It'll be the hundreds of thousands that are starving for a McDonald's burger in America. Okay?
And it goes deeper than that, Bob, because consider how many pounds of wheat does it take to create a pound of hamburger? Or, no, well, not wheat, but how many pounds of grass? How many pounds of corn? You know.
Yeah, it takes, you know, and you turn this center of this country, you know, we're talking about the northern part of the center, right, into a dust bowl. That dust is going to keep moving. humidity that we're supposed to be having this time of year, we usually have the Gulf Stream bringing up the moisture, hitting that cold Canadian trough coming down from the Arctic, and it turns into snow and rain, and we end up with wet topsoil, and the topsoil stays when the wind blows. Right now, Bob, we don't have one bit of snow. No ice, nothing on the ground. There's nothing to hold the topsoil where it belongs. Nothing. I'm talking the truth to you. I'm looking up. It's dry and brown, and there's nothing here. And in a few months, if it continues like this, there will be no spring wheat. There'll be no hard red wheat. There'll be no grains grown in North Dakota. Now, that's the beginning, Bob. We're at the tip of the iceberg right here. We're right at that, you know, where you first see it. Because we're sitting in the central plains, we're in the northern central plains, and we're at the high, what do you call it, that high plateau everybody talks about?
Yeah.
It ain't a plateau. But we're sitting right at the beginning of it. And if it continues, and there's no end to it, and it continues on the way it's going, we're not going to have food to feed you people in New York City, in Los Angeles, Seattle, and wherever else you're at. You're not going to have any food. Where are you going to grow it? You can't grow it on the ocean. You can't grow it on your sandy little beaches. You can't grow it on your skyscrapers in New York. And you sure as hell can't grow it in Washington, D.C. Because you can't grow anything in Washington, D.C. except a lie, a liar, and a bunch of lying, Republicans. That's the only thing you can grow in Washington, D.C. is about a pack of liars, because they don't live.
Well, look, the American South is burning up with drought to the point that Georgia is nigh to getting nasty with the state of Tennessee wanting to put a pipe into the Tennessee River and divert it to bring water to Atlanta.
Sounds like Los Angeles and, what is that, Arizona?
Yeah. I mean, it's gonna get ugly,
like,
Bob.
California fighting over the water out of the Colorado River.
Yeah,
you know,
how many?
California says we got to have more of that water out of the Colorado River. And Arizona says no, we need more of that water. So
and Las Vegas says, wait, we want to build another hotel with a great big fountain and build another golf course in the desert.
Yeah.
No, there are ecological troubles coming and.
We're looking at a,
something as simple sounding as topsoil is profound. Profound.
It is. But I'm looking at dust flying. I mean, and these, some of these tumbleweeds going by. William said, "Dad, it looks like, you know, like a rolling pickup truck. These are huge tumbleweeds.
Real live, honest to God tumbleweeds.
Real live, honest to God tumbleweeds." Flying past the house, close to 60 miles an hour with the wind behind them. It is unbelievable, Bob. I have never seen anything like it. I mean, Bob, I've lived in this country since I gave it up and said I've had enough of the armed forces of the United States were there. I gave it up. I came here because I thought, bring my kids, my family, get away from the coast, get away from the city, get away from all that ugliness, all that hatred that's going on there, to someplace peaceful, and I can go to rest and just say, I've had enough. And I'm looking out my window, and I'm watching hell on earth, and I'm saying, you can't get away from it. You can't run from it. You can't hide from it. The only thing you can do is address it and say, okay, here I make my stand. Here I say the truth. Here I call into Bob Kincaid's show, his head-on radio network, and say, people, get your heads out of your whatever you got them in and look up and say, change it. But, Bob, I'm an Obama man. You know why I'm an Obama man?
Why is that?
I believe Obama may have the answer. He may not be the best candidate.
I don't think we'll ever get the best candidate.
No, he may not even be the correct candidate, but he is the only candidate that can actually look at both sides of the coin, okay? These right-wingers keep flipping over his white half or his black half, and they can't even look at the man as a man and say, Obama has something they don't have, and that scares the hell out of him. He has heritage on both sides, Bob. He's not black. He's not white. He is Barack Obama. He is an individual, and Bob, I support him because he is neither black nor white. He is a man, and maybe, just maybe, he might be the Franklin Delano Roosevelt of the future. He might be that man. I don't know. He's not crippled by his legs being crippled by polio. Absolutely not. But he is a crippled man. He's being crippled by prejudice. He's being crippled by prejudice against the whites. He's being crippled by prejudice against the blacks. He's being crippled by people's idea of themselves. And he's not who you think he is. He is an individual. And he just might be our only salvation because he might be the Franklin Delano Roosevelt of the future. He might be that guy that puts both black men and white men together and brings us together.
Well, see, Bob, I'm not going to be an Obama person or a Hillary person.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm going to support my party's nominee in November.
Okay.
And I'm not griping at you. I'm just telling you why I come from where I come from.
I know. I will vote for Hillary. I will hold my nose if she's the chosen one, okay? Because she is a Democrat.
Yeah, I won't even have to hold my nose. I will march proudly into the booth and cast my vote for the Democratic nominee.
Well, I'll hold my
because despite all the attempts to say that, you know, there's no difference between Hillary and McCain or what yada 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 yada, there is. They are profound differences.
There's a big difference between Hillary and McCain.
Now, I have issues, you know, my candidate was gone a long time ago.
Mine too.
So I'm going to go and...
Well, he was kind of a short guy, wasn't his name, Kucinich?
Yeah.
Mine too. Eh?
Right.
I love Kucinich.
So, you know, I'm going to go in and make my own private decision in the voting booth, and I'm not going to get into this nasty little war that a lot of apparently far less politically savvy so-called Democrats have gotten into on the Internet or in the media.
I have been chastised unto death because of my stance to say I'm tired of listening to, oh, my gosh, we've got a white woman denigrating a black man. Oh, no, he's a half black man. I'm tired of it, Bob.
I'm sick to death of all of that foolishness. Now,
yes, it is.
Where the rubber meets the road for me is while Senator Clinton and voted for the war, and there's, you know, she can explain it 6 million times.
Let's not get into that. I voted for it before I voted against.
Look, she did. Senator Obama couldn't vote for it or against it. He was not in the United States Senate at the time.
He wasn't there. Okay, so he
what
can't get into that.
Now, I think, however, and you know, I think, however, that looking at it with a reasonably open mind,
okay,
it would appear to me clear, especially, you know, from what they're saying on the stump, unless they're just lying through their teeth, that both candidates are committed to ending the war and to bringing our people home. And that is critically important to me because John McCain is not.
Absolutely not. You're right. You're absolutely correct there, Bob.
So, you know, we've got decisions to make, but I'm not going to sit here and pontificate until at one point in time I said it looked like I was going to be supporting Obama.
No, I got to. I just have to.
No. I understand. And you're welcome to share that information, Bob.
I don't disrespect Ms. Clinton, okay? But I have have to question something, and I can't question faith in a human being. And I have listened to the speeches, I have listened to the talk, I have listened to the pundits, and I'm tired of it, Bob. I'm tired of listening to somebody telling me what I should think about somebody else. And that's why I'm saying, if you are going to run down my next door neighbor, okay, I'm going to stand beside him, Bob. I'm going to stand beside him and say, no mas, no more. I'm tired of it, okay? And if Hillary wants to run somebody down, that's her prerogative. But this is not a popularity contest we're fighting for, Bob.
Now, as far as I'm concerned, this election is deadly in earnest.
It is not popularity. I'm not thinking of Obama for a popularity contest or Hillary Clinton or John McCain. Oh, spit. And I'm a Vietnam veteran, okay?
Yeah.
I served 2 tours there, and I saw enough hell on earth there to make... I mean, I told my son about it the other day, and I wept, and he thought, Dad's going out of his mind. And I told him, I don't want you to ever experience that. I don't want you to ever, ever have to know what I know. But please, son, do this for me. Never, ever accept what one man tells you just because he's the guy you think you want to follow. Look into it. Think about it. But be specific on what your goals are. And I want this earth to be at peace, like the Christians call on their deity, Jesus, to give peace on earth. But I would rather see it that we give peace on earth to Jesus. The human population is close to 7 billion people on this planet. If we could give peace to our neighbor and our neighbor's neighbor and to the next man down the road, the one you don't know, that guy that's living in a cardboard box under a bridge in Mississippi or wherever, Tupelo, Mississippi, I think about that every now and then. But think about it. If you are secure in your family and in your home, you're very, very lucky today, because tomorrow it can change. It can in an instant be swept away by the wind. And I'm looking at something that I can't believe. And I'm looking out west. I'm looking west of my property, and I'm closer to Montana. I'm so close to it, if the wind's out of the east, I can sit in Montana. And it is ugly. And it's frightening. And it's very frightening, Bob, because I've never seen this before, not since I've been in Dakota Territory. Have I ever seen it this dusty this time of year? It's usually wet and starting to turn green. Right now there's no snow, there's no moisture, there's nothing to hold Mother Earth, or the topsoil as you call it, where the plants can grow and where the animals of this earth, those cattle and those hogs and those chickens that you slap into your skillet every night, can grow. If you can't feed the animals, you can't feed the humans, and the humans are the ones that are causing this, Bob. It is not God. It is not the sun. It's not the moon. It is the human population of this earth that are so selfish that they cannot put back what they take, and they take more than they give, and that's the truth. My friend, I'm sorry. I probably got you wrapped out of your commercial by now, don't I?
No worries. But
I was pontificating again. I hate it.
Well, you know, but that's okay. As long as it was you blustering and not me. Apparently, I bluster.
I love you, Bob, and love to Agnes and the kids, and give them all a hug and a kiss
You take care.
Love to you. And
give our best to Glenda.
And to the family in the chat. To you, too. I love you all.
All right. Take care, Bob.
Good night.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Nice to get a report from on the ground. When a North Dakota farmer tells you that things aren't looking so good on the high plains, you have a reason to be a little bit concerned. Because this is this is not something you can just shrug away. We already know that because of fuel prices, staples are going up and going to continue to go up. Email in from Kate. Ooh, Bob, did you call her a bitch on air, or were you quoting out of... No, I was quoting. Maybe an apology is in order, Kate says. We can't afford the negative energy in the universe. Yeah. I get that. But she also writes, to the emailer, sycophant, self-serving, indulging in servile flattery. Kate says, dang, that wouldn't be me. Girl, you wouldn't believe the way I indulge in rabid criticism and argumentative critiquing of this blustering downer on air, in email, and in chat. Pull it in, girl. We're all on edge, running on empty. We're allowed to bluster. That's what makes an audience. So far, freedom of speech. Now, see, I'm the one who's blustering. You guys are the sycophants. I bluster, you sycophant. So far, freedom of speech hasn't been suspended on the horn. The only thing that will shut us down is the lack of support, including conversation. I honor your opinion. If you feel that way, probably there are others. Please call in and start a dialogue. It doesn't have to be argument with rancor, but we all have to express ourselves. That's what makes conversation radio. In part, you're correct. There is an annoying homogeneity in the calling audience. Please call in for a discussion. Lucky for the listeners, I'd be an every night caller arguing and challenging the conventional wisdom, but I'd rather spend my paltry Social Security check on the horn rather than buying cell phone minutes. I probably should have left the quote unread, but it just popped up on my screen. For my part, I apologize. But you know what? I honest to God, don't know where this is supposed to go. I don't know how I do 3 hours of happy talk when the American body politic is bleeding at every orifice. Or maybe when I get a little bit less than sycophantic myself about our political candidates, when I do realism, when I talk straight about them. Look, there's no getting around the fact that Hillary Clinton voted for the war. It was a horrible mistake, and I would assume that it is one that troubles her conscience. She has, however, apparently changed her tune and wants the war over. Others have done the same. To hold her to a higher standards simply because she's running for president is BS. Barack Obama, as I said, wasn't in the Senate in 2002. He wasn't there to vote either yay or nay. On the other hand, he hasn't met a war funding bill that he hasn't loved until he started running for president. That's a fact. And if you don't like it coming from me, imagine what it's going to be like when it comes from every single media outlet this country has. Because it's gonna. Self-righteous? Me? I don't think so. What's self-righteous about me? I don't say I'm better than anybody. I certainly don't say I'm better than you. I'm better than Repiglicans, by a long shot, because I haven't contributed to the nightmare that is this country. I didn't vote for that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout. Never have, never will. Therefore, I don't think I'm part of the problem. But you know what? Children like to have... One of my best friends growing up, his mother would have... When he was a little boy, his mother would have to hide his vegetables behind a little mound of chocolate pudding. I can't imagine what broccoli tastes like with chocolate pudding, or English peas for that matter, or cooked carrots. But that's the way she had to do it if she wanted to get him to eat a vegetable. And maybe that's the way it is with some people who think that they're liberals. They can't deal with honest criticism of political candidates. They can't deal with honest assessments of political events or social stories or news. Or no, we've got to put the little pile of pudding in front of it and make a joke out of it. Sometimes it is impossible to get a laugh out of 4,000 dead people. Is that self-righteous? Am I blustering? No. No. All I can promise every night is the facts as I have them and the truth as I perceive it. It is my truth, not anybody else's. I don't foist it on you. Nobody has to say ditto when the phone comes online. Now, I don't need anybody else going out on the veranda because I'm using the cross. This is all by choice. No guns, no compulsion. There is no compulsion in conversation radio. Did you know that? It's not in the Quran. Thank you, Kate. Thank you for your input. We are all coming unglued. Our pal David in Tennessee says, when Bob in North Dakota looks out a window and speaks about what he sees, it weighs in a way more heavy than, say, oh, Ms. Dana at the podium doing, like, oh, carriers, and yeah, I don't know the difference between a carrier and a destroyer, you know? Yeah. But this is this is the reality that people don't hear anywhere else. Best pay attention to where the topsoil's going. Because wherever it's blowing, your meal's going with it. As I told you, I've been... And I don't have a lot of time for reading, but, you know, a chapter a night, a few pages a night before Agnes and I fall asleep, 2, 3 in the morning. Get up and do it again at 8. I'll read a few pages of a book by Jared Diamond called Collapse, and there's just all kinds of stuff about topsoil and erosion in that book. I know it doesn't sound terribly exciting this way, but believe me, it is. He tells you where topsoil comes from and how you get more of it. You know where the topsoil that Bob in North Dakota's talking about came from? It was sort of ginned up, ground up, the last time that a glacier moved through his neck of the woods. And that was a lot of thousands of years ago. There's not likely to be another one for a while. Because glaciers have to start somewhere, and the place that the glaciers start has melted. So, you know, it doesn't look real good. You also get it from volcanoes, too. Not a lot of volcanoes in North Dakota or on up into the steppes of Canada. Might be a good idea to pay attention. As soon as I figure out a joke to make about topsoil, I will. Or maybe I'll be self-righteous about it. Or bluster some. Further commentary, the right and the backward-looking hate Obama for the very reason that is his strength. He's the American of our future. Come here, a half generation ahead of any majority understanding. Like it or not, haters of today's America, our colors are mixing. Every color of human can, just might, here and there does, see another color as the color of their soulmate. Get over it, segregationist America. Here comes the future. And I might add, to use a phrase that George Carlin once did, that color is sort of an off coffee. Cream in your coffee. Not quite completely dark, like, you know, coffee without any cream in it, and not white like a, you know, not all pitifully, you know, just pale like a latte with extra soy foam or whatever it is you pay $6.75 for a cup of at Starbucks. But just a little of this and a little of that. And it's all, I guess, I don't know, you know, some specificity from Laura would have been nice about what constitutes blustering and what constitutes being self-righteous. Is it self-righteous when I say that I wish Obama wasn't running around with the coal whores? Well, I really do wish he wasn't running around with the coal whores. Is it self-righteous when I suggest that Hillary would do well not to say stupid crap like, maybe we can put the mountains back together again? I don't think that's being self-righteous. I wouldn't say anything that's stupid. Of course, I live in the mountains, and I know that, you know, what God hath brought together, man puts asunder and cannot bring together again. Or is it the religion thing? I don't know. I'm perceived widely as some great big baby-eating atheist. I'm not. I just don't. That's just the one part of my life that I don't share, because it's mine. And I don't expect anybody else to understand it, because faith and religion are largely incomprehensible. Go and try out some group religion and see how comprehensible it is. They'll tell you about magic crackers and virgins having babies. You know, insane stuff. Or prophets riding horses that have wings. Woo! You know, junk that doesn't happen. I don't know. I'll just tell you that as far as I can tell, from an analytic standpoint, it's nuts. But there's a lot more coming in the next hour. Your phone calls are always welcome. You know that. We'll find something to talk about, I have no doubt. And we'll, you know, play a tune or two. Why not? I want to tell you about something I heard on local talk radio the other day. And it was a part of a discussion that I had a couple of nights ago. I'd like your thoughts on it. We'll be back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. It's an experiment that you make happen. We'll be back.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Patient care and nurse staffing levels are at the heart of the 10-day strike by 4,000 nurses against Sutter Hospitals in the San Francisco area. California Nurses Association RN Jan Rodolfo walked a Berkeley picket line on Monday.
From a patient's perspective, it's about when you hit your call light, does a nurse come right away? If you're in pain or you're short of breath, is a nurse able to get there right away to give you what you need? As nurses, it's about whether or not we're provided with adequate meal and break coverage. Right now, the hospital's put a lot of pressure on us to walk away from our patients to take a break without providing us someone who can take care of our patients in our absence. So we typically don't get a break, even in a 12-hour shift, you know, more than just trying to gobble, you know, half a sandwich at the desk.
Rodolfo says Sutter is harshly anti-union, and that hurts both patients and nurses.
They are very philosophically, strongly anti-union corporation. It's Sutter Health. Very aggressive in union busting, and the level of intimidation in the facilities is really intense as well. Very punitive, looking for reasons to discipline people, following people around with security when they walk through to talk to their coworkers.
17 security officers and community allies were arrested in Minneapolis on Thursday as they protested for a fair contract. Jesse Russell reports.
The most recent target of the security workers seeking a fair contract with five Twin City security contractors was U.S. Bancorp. According to Workday Minnesota, nearly 100 union members and supporters marched on the lobby of U.S. Bancorp Thursday, demanding a contract that includes affordable health insurance. About 800 private security contractors are represented by Service Employees International Union Local 26, and they are in negotiations concerning a contract that expired on January 1st. The group representing the five contractors said the most recent rejected contract was the last best final best offer. However, after the sit-down strike on Thursday that resulted in 17 arrests, the companies issued a statement saying they are dedicated to working with its employees and the union to provide an affordable health plan. Then on Monday morning, a federal mediator said the companies have no plans to negotiate at this time. SEIU's members represent nearly 80% of the security guards in the Twin Cities, and the union has been authorized to call a strike if necessary. Here is today's economic report. Some good news for the economy? It depends on which side of the fence you are on, the buying or the selling side. Sales of existing homes made an unexpected increase in February, suggesting some buyers are taking advantage of the heavy price cuts happening around the country. Sales of existing homes jumped by 2.9% in February. That's the biggest increase in a year. According to the National Association of Realtors, the median existing sales price dropped to $195,900, the biggest drop in 9 years.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
All right, hour number three. Wanted to share something with you from the Internet's most brilliant satirist. It'll show up on your RDA of Irony tomorrow. Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com. Pangloss Buchanan gives thanks. Jesus. You know, most great writers need someone to write their headlines for them. Not Eugene. Pangloss Buchanan gives thanks. It's a beautiful thing. Check this out. Last weekend, and of course this is, last weekend, Patrick Buchanan told African Americans they should be singing Zippity Doodah. Ugh. Quote, America has been the best country on earth for black folks. It was here that 600,000 black people brought from Africa in slave ships, grew into a community of 40 million, were introduced to Christian salvation, and reached the greatest levels of freedom and prosperity blacks have ever known. Eugene notes, actually more than 1 million signed aboard the Middle Passage pleasure cruises to North America, but half of them apparently did not complete the tour. Those midnight buffets can kill you. And lest he be thought an ingrate, Mr. Buchanan will certainly want to thank England for its solicitous attention to Ireland. 8 centuries of companionship. But for Britain's encouragement, the Irish might never have learned the English language or realized the excitement of adhering to Catholicism. The Irish construction industry can never repay its debt to Oliver Cromwell and the urban renewal he inspired in the towns and villages he visited. England also demonstrated a consistent concern for Irish health. Lest they succumb to indolence and cholesterol on the more fertile lands, the Irish were encouraged to take a vigorous hike to the western half of the island. There they could enjoy a real aerobic workout on soil that was perfect for an all-potato diet. Thanks to these British benefits, some Irish became entrepreneurs. The lucky ones received scholarships to Australia. The rest earned public recognition as the patrons of British carpentry. And when the potato crop failed, the British landowners wouldn't think of letting the Irish stay on infertile land. The open road awaited them, with ample ditches where they could lie down and sleep away the troubles forever. Those who made it to a port and still had a few pence for fare enjoyed the benefits of Britain's maritime policies. There was no need to encumber migration with safety or hygiene minimums for ships, so in the 1840s the Irish enjoyed a middle passage of their own. Arriving in America, they found the American Protestants were just as friendly as the British ones. These Irish immigrants could locate the nearest Catholic church by looking for the fire. But the real benefit of living in America is that there's always someone else to hate. The Irish assimilated themselves by hating the next wave of immigrants. And Patrick Buchanan certainly is thankful for that, the opportunity to learn and imitate 8 centuries of bigotry. That is his American dream, making the best of being the worst. See, this is Buchanan's remarks were a general response to the audacity of Barack Obama having the unmitigated gall of talking about the fact that things haven't exactly been hunky-dory for black folks in America. Like I said, I've heard it several times over now because the rerun stream runs from here. So very little runs on the horn that I don't hear some way or another. That is a stunning piece of bigotry, though. Patrick Buchanan apparently doesn't know that an African brought to America for slavery purposes had something on the order of less than a 50% chance of reaching 45, 50 years of age? And I'm sure Patrick Buchanan would have some means of excusing or apologizing for whippings, beatings, lynchings, burnings, there's some sort of an excuse, of course. This just astonishes me. We're introduced to Christian salvation. Huh? Like somehow or another being an animist in an African society is not equal to Christian salvation? That's just sickening. I'm glad Eugene called it to our attention. But you see, right-wingers can talk that garbage and get away with it, and somebody's always there to sign their check. You know, what Eugene does in such beautiful fashion is to point out that Patrick Buchanan is merely repeating and replicating ancient bigotries that were arguably once turned on his forebears. The Irish, recipients of British carpentry. Dear God, were introduced to Christian salvation. And what did that do for them, Patrick? How many bellies did that fill? How many educations did that give? Precious little. Best country on earth for black folks. Tell that to the people who finally found freedom via the Underground Railroad in places like Canada. Oh, by the way, another email in from Kate. Blustering here. North Dakota Bob's topsoil all came from our fields in Montana. We let them have all the good stuff. Those tumbleweed seeds were in the soil. And we kicked their butts in basketball, too. Decades-old rivalry, Kate. Oh, rub it in, Kate. Rub it in. So, Jesus. I don't know. In honor of Patrick Buchanan, and since Eugene sort of reminded us of it, I'll offer this.
Zippity doo da, zippity yay. My oh my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine hitting my way. Zippity doo da, zippity yay. Mr. Bluebird on my shoulder. It's the truth, it's actual. Everything is satisfactory. Zippity doo da, zippity yay. Wonderful feeling, wonderful day. More there. I zip it in to die, zip day. Wonderful feeling, wonderful day.
Yeah. Well, sorry, couldn't resist that. And thanks to ELO for getting that to me so quickly. These things, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens on the fly here. And a quick program note. Unfortunately, I got an email from Peter Godbold earlier today saying that he was going to have to go into one of his clients and deal with a PEBCAC issue. Now, most of you are computer literate to one degree or another, so you understand what PEBCAC means. Problem exists between keyboard and chair. Well, come on. I play that song and I'm trying to quit being such a downer. But anyway, Peter's going to be a rerun this evening because it's another one of those all-day crisis-solving kind of things. But I wanted to mention something to you, and I wanted to share this idea with you by way of figuring out what the answer is, or how we reach our answers in our political decisions. I am not inclined to name names here, but we have a representative in the legislature who has been right on a bunch of issues. He's right about workers' comp. He's right about workers' issues in general. He's right about labor issues in general. He's right about insurance companies and how rapacious they are. He's right about, as far as I can tell, mountaintop removal. But the other day, when I knew that Barack Obama was going to be in Beckley, I tuned in the right-wing station because I knew that they would be fairly frothing at the mouth with all manner of filth and hate. And they were, it turned out. I got informed about it, but I only caught on toward the end of the program when this individual was going off about gay people. You see, he was proud of having stopped a piece of legislation in the legislature, oddly enough. Legislation in the legislature. Oops, I'd hate to be self-righteous about that. And he was going to amend, or had amended, the bill where it referred to not being able to fire someone because of perceived sexual orientation. In other words, you can't fire somebody or refuse to hire somebody because you think they're gay. And he wanted to, and or may have, amended the language to change it from sexual orientation to sexual preference. Because, you see, in his world, people choose their sexual orientation. He just got up one morning and decided to be hetero. Some people get up in the morning and decide to be a member of one of the most hated groups in this country, gay folks. Sexual choice. And just choose it. They prefer it. Guy's got a long history of standing up for workers' rights, but he wanted to make sure that gay people remained second-class citizens without protection in the law. And it made me think a lot, because like I said, this guy's been right on a lot of issues. But Lord God, he hates gay people with a purple pad, with a rainbow-colored passion. And it made me think about how I view politics, and, you know, there's a lot of compromise involved. But is there a line? Is there a line in the sand? If a guy, for instance, said, I want to rein in the insurance companies and I want to fix workers' compensation, but I also don't think we need to pass legislation that says people of one skin color have all the rights to public accommodations as people of another skin color. Would that undo all the good work? Would that stop you from being counted among his supporters? For me, it does. Because every night that Peter Godbold, for instance, is able to do a show, I'm here to produce it. And I don't think that if I voted for that man, I could ever, in good conscience, count Peter among my friends. Because I don't think he would, and I'm not speaking for him, but I don't think he would feel like I was his friend. Because this individual is actually running for governor of this state. And he says a lot of the right things. But he is also a religious fundamentalist who despises people for how he perceives that they have sex. Because he thinks that his God doesn't like people to have sex that way, even though his God made them that way. And I'd be interested in your thoughts. Can something like unmitigated bigotry wipe out all the other good that a person does? I almost conclude that it can. I do conclude that it can. Because there are too many, you know, we've got straight people, gay people, bi people, trans people, the entire panoply of the human condition, dark-skinned folks, light-skinned folks, Asian people, European people, African people, Australian people, Chinese people, Japanese people, who listen to this program. And if I were to go and endorse hatred for any one group, or preference for one group over another, because I thought, well, you know, he'll do the right thing on the other issues, you know, this I can over... How can you overlook that? I can't. Because over the course of time, I have determined that, in fact, voting is an ethical and moral act involving ethical and moral choices. Sometimes our choices are better than others. And sometimes, I suppose, people determine that in order to be ethical, they must stay out of the process altogether, which is in itself a vote of a sort. It is the vote that was exercised by Bartleby in Bartleby the Scrivener when he simply said, I prefer not to. And it can come with hellish consequences. So when I heard that bigotry being spewed about people just, you know, preferring sex with their, you know, men preferring sex with other men or women preferring sex with other women, I realized I was dealing with a full-scale, full-on bigot. And that no matter how hard or how much I might prefer his other positions, he had canceled himself for me with that profound act of human hatred. With that determination that there is a class of people in this society who are not entitled to the full protection of the Constitution of the United States. Maybe I just have to leave the governor's office blank in the primary because I don't have a candidate. Maybe I choose the lesser of two evils in the general, only to prevent the more evil one from getting into office. But this is the kind of thing, and here I'm being deliberately self-righteous, trying not to bluster. The point behind all of this is to direct not yours exclusively, but mine as well, my attention to the consequences of exercising the franchise that has been fought and died for and crippled for and maimed for by so many generations in this country. And yet we treat it, and the media treat it, and the professional journalists treat it as if it was some sort of, at best, horse race, and at worst, popularity contest. Ooh, she's white. Ooh, he's black. Is there anybody in this listening audience, and now I'm beginning to wonder, who would make a decision based on something as inconsequential as that? On the other hand, how can you blame someone who would make their choice of candidate in a primary, for instance, based upon how a candidate responds for a gay person to the gay community? Or how a person responds to mountaintop removal if the explosions are going on right behind your house? But my query to you is there a short list of things that a candidate can say or do that no matter how good the rest of his or her positions stop you dead in your tracks from ever supporting them? Would you vote for a Klansman who promised to end the war in Iraq? Well, I guess that's kind of like voting for Ron Paul. Maybe that's a bad example. But that's my inquiry. Hi, have I got? It's going to be one of those nights. Well, it's almost not one of those nights. But it's been troubling me ever since I heard it, and I heard it Thursday morning. And by way of associating it with something else, out in Texas, I guess there is a town or a city or village or hamlet or whatever, intersection of two highways, what place called Mustang Ridge, Texas. And Mustang Ridge, Texas has, of course, a city council, and on that city council sits Charles Laws. And on March 12th, they were debating an immigrant detention center. And in the course of debating that immigrant detention center, Mustang Ridge City Council member Charles Laws referred to it as a holding, and this is a quote, holding pen for wetbacks. He was asked about his hateful, bigoted, filthy, prejudicial comments, and Charles Laws explained, quote, "I'm 74 years old, and that's what we called them when I was growing up.
I don't care about political crap.
Mustang Ridge is apparently not too awfully far from Austin. What do we do with politicians like this? And what do we think of the people who put them in office? Are you still, I mean, if you found out that your next door neighbor, and you lived in Mustang Ridge, and you found out that your next door neighbor had voted for Charles Laws, even after hearing him say, "It's a holding pen for wetbacks," how would you feel about being neighbors with that person? Well, everybody's got their right to their opinion. But do we not have rights to draw lines in the sand? At what point, where's the getting off spot? For the bigotry and the prejudice and the racism and the sexism that infects our culture. Do you see what I'm getting at? This is terrible. This is very... I hesitated to bring the issue up. Because it's profoundly disturbing to me. A lot of Americans do go to the polls, and they vote based on, well, I've heard of him, haven't heard of her. Guess I'll vote for the guy I've heard of. Even if you heard of him because he referred to an immigrant detention center as a holding pen for wetbacks. Do we just write it off? I mean, it's all secret ballot, but people talk about who they're going to vote for, and they put bumper stickers on their cars and stuff. How do you feel about it? I mean, do you trust someone? Do you trust anyone who would vote for John McCain? I mean, honestly, honest to God, do you? Would you trust someone with any portion of your well-being or your life or your property? Who would vote for a guy who's as likely as not to start a war with Iran, who has guaranteed us that he will order the troops to stay in Iraq for 100 years, doesn't care, who doesn't know the difference between Sunni and Shia? Well, I guess what I'm asking about is where this country is right now. Going all the way back to the beginning of the program and the essay by Michael Moore. And his comments on Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney's comments. So... what do you do? How do you respond in this divided nation? Because for me, it has approached a place that is similar to what it must have been like between the pro-slavery people and the abolitionists before the Civil War. Some issues are so profound that they will split family, they will split friends, split cities, towns, neighborhoods, next-door neighbors. Do you let it go that far with you, or do you just write it off to, well, you know, they probably saw more ads? Like I said, I was producing Mark's show, and some right-wing goober called looking for Mark Levin. And then got ugly. What do you do with these people? What? How do you feel? I mean, there's not that many of them left, but how do you feel when you're driving down the road and you see a vehicle with Bush Cheney 04 still on it? How do you feel about the person operating that vehicle? Do you do kind of like what I do, and just as you drive by them and they look over, you just kind of shake your head like, what in the hell is wrong with you? Where is America in March of 2008? How divided are we? And how do we get back and beat that down? Beat that back. How do we destroy that division? How do we come together? Is this the part of the program where we all sing Kumbaya? Because I don't think Kumbaya works anymore. Because I don't trust them. At all. Any of them. The Bush-Cheney people. And the bigots. And the warmongers. I don't trust them. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, this is Gerard from Indiana.
Hey, Gerard, what's up, man?
Well, I just kind of along the lines of what you were talking about, I just wanted to relate quickly. I know we're coming up to the end here. Experience I had last Wednesday, went downtown to... I've gone to several of these downtown South Bend peace vigils, people standing out protesting the war. We had a pretty good turnout. It was about, for a community this size, there was about 300 to 350 people who were willing to stand out in the 30-degree weather. And we started out just, there were a couple of people gave some speeches, and then we lined up along one of the main thoroughfares through downtown with signs, and they had like a banner that they unfurled. It was just a piece, basically a long sheet of red plastic, and attached to the red plastic was notebook-sized pieces of paper. And printed on those pieces of paper were, in not an overly large font, were the names of the people, all the people who had died in Iraq so far. And that banner stretched a good city block. And the... one of the people who had organized and had given a speech earlier and referred to the wall in Washington D.C., the Vietnam Memorial, and was hoping that we wouldn't have to have an Iraq memorial as well. But I was standing there, and it was kind of a bittersweet moment because I was grateful that, because, like I said, having gone to a few of these things, you start to see the same faces. And I'm not sure, maybe standing out on a corner is in some ways a form of singing Kumbaya, but I found myself glad that at least these people came out. At least they're willing to stop their lives to come out to make this statement. And while we were standing there, on the PA system, they played Martin Luther King's speech. I'm sure there's a title for it, but it's basically it was a speech he gave explaining why he would not support the war in Vietnam. It's the one where there's the line, free at last, thank God Almighty, we're free at last. And he gave a statistic during that war that the United States government had spent $500,000 per enemy killed that they could count in
right.
Vietnam.
Yeah.
And it was bittersweet for me because I just stood there thinking, you know, how that was, you know, getting 40 years ago.
And what's it come to now?
Worse. You know, what has changed? You know, we're sending literally skids of money.
Yeah, literally. 18 trailer truckloads.
Yeah.
That's just the money that was lost.
Yeah. And what are we doing? What for what? And, you know, W gets made us, you know, I'm surprised he even recognized the 4,000.
Well, they made him because it was a question and answer session. He didn't do it voluntarily. No way.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, and he made the statement, the audacity of this guy. He made the statement, every life is precious. And I'm thinking, really? Really? You really think they're you know, how precious are the thousands upon thousands of Iraqis that have died because you made the decision to go there? How precious were their lives? And I don't know. I think, you know, Martin Luther King and Gandhi before him, I think they were doing more than singing Kumbaya.
Yeah, they were. Well, I mean, they were nonviolent, but they were very, very active in their resistance. They were everywhere you turned around.
Well, they also were very pointed in their resistance and did things deliberately to get a response from the bigots and the warmongers.
Right, because you have to unmask them.
Yeah.
You have to show them for the bigots that they are.
And I just think that's what we have to do. We just have to keep at it. We just have to keep at it and get better at it. I don't know how to put it any more different than that. But, you know, you mentioned the Pat Buchanan thing. A couple of years ago, I had a good fortune. I'll make this as quick as I can. I had the good fortune to meet a man by the name of Brazil Denard, who teaches choir or music in the inner city Detroit schools. And he's a man who keeps the slave songs alive. He was the one of the few grandchildren of slaves that are left. And he explained to, I was in a group, a choir group, who was learning slave songs, and he came to talk to us about them and gave us a seminar on them. And I always, you know, Buchanan's thing talking about the Africans got the wonders of Christianity, but then they used those songs and the songs of that Christian faith to use in the slave slave songs, they had coded words, which led them to the Underground Railroad and escape from the blessings of the Christian South.
Yeah, because that same salvation that was introduced was also used to reinforce the fact that God wanted them to be slaves, and all the St. Paul garbage was quoted to them, and the Old Testament stuff that puts the imprimatur of approval on the institution of human bondage.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it was so ironic, and to me, just a testament of the human spirit that indoctrination was turned then into
resistance
songs, which were coded with, you know, the escape route out of their misery. Brazil Denard is a man, you know, he's just one of those people that you are grateful that you have met in your lifetime. He's just an amazing individual. But
oh, I should think so.
So I guess the thing I want to say is just, you know, we got to keep fighting. And just for all the listeners out there,
Gerard, do you draw a line in the sand? I mean, is there a?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. To me, I guess maybe I'm idealistic, but as far as people who hold political office are concerned, there are things, you know, the example you gave of the fellow in your legislature there. I said, you know, I just, there's some things I can't, you know, I can't stomach.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too far. It just is. Well, I appreciate it, and like I said,
he's not representing me. I mean, he doesn't. You know, I understand politicians have a tough job, the good ones, but they still got to represent me.
Yeah.
I guess just in conclusion, you know, for the listeners out there, I just noticed them today. You know, it's important that we keep the horn going. We're at 60% for the month of March.
Yeah.
So.
And it didn't grow much over the weekend. A little bit, but not a lot. And there's seven days left in the month. So.
Yeah. And I think it's good, Bob, to have that little graph on there.
John spent a lot of time on the website over the weekend. And that's that. You know, that's the thing. There's really, truth be told, there's no days off here.
Yeah.
There's always something to be done. I spent a chunk of Easter and the day before playing inside computers. Playing. Yeah. Right. Playing. But you know, you get the idea. Sure.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate it, Gerard. I do. Thank you very much, and hope we hear from you soon. Okay.
I sure will.
All right. Take care.
Talk to you later.
Bye now. And let's see if we can work one last call in.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Gene, what's up?
Well, I was glad for that call, George, because, geez, I was like, after the story about the girl down in Missouri, I was like, God, why? That was enough to bring you to me, kind of want to just say, you know, what's the point? But I was glad that Gerard said what he said, because if he can keep on going, I guess I can too. But I was like, at this point, I know how you feel. It's like it is voting for the lesser of two evils. And even then, I don't even know if I'm assuming that I'll probably vote for Barack Obama. I mean, I'm sure he's a great guy, but I'm not sure whether or not he's going to be able to get us out of this mess or not. And sometimes I think to myself, geez, I do like to either move to a different country or just secede, or I know you hate that word, and I do too. Or what to do. I want to pull my hair out of that. So, yeah, I understand where you're at. I just don't know, other than to try to keep calm and keep going, it's hard to keep the energy level up. It really is. And I don't know how you get people to get in there and work harder. I just don't know.
I don't either. And I think maybe that's the ultimate answer here, Gene, is that there's no ultimate answer. What goes on in the voting booth and the choices we make are choices that we personally have to live with first.
Yeah, and I know I'm really crossing the line here, but I kind of really feel like you just maybe it's gonna take another 4 years of even worse stuff to get people to say we just can't take this anymore. I'm going to hate to see what the country's like in the end of that 4 years.
I can't stand the idea of what America looks like after 4 years of John McCain.
And neither can I. I don't think... I'm not even sure there'll be a real...
But there I go again. I'm being a downer, so, you know, I apologize.
No, it's just the way... Where everybody's at. I'm just as you are. Anyway, I should let you go.
All right. So, thank you, Gene.
Sure.
Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. That pretty much wraps it up. Couple of emails just to finish things. Kate adds in again, crossing the line, bigotry and racism are who folks are. The way the hired politician votes is what they do to keep their jobs. They can't change who they are. They can only say what they think you want to hear. I routinely fire friends and acquaintances, keep my addresses in pencil for that very reason. She says, glad you're having the dilemma. If you have the question, you have the answer. There's no list, short or otherwise. I don't know how to make compromises with folks who want me dead. Zippity-doo-duh. Yeah. And Brandon says, I saw a bumper sticker, Bush Cheney 04, on a car, and I think, what a stupid moron. I usually try to keep a civil tongue, pardon my language. But seriously, I see the current state of our nation as the Second Civil War. This is a war for the future of our country. On one side, power-mad corporatists whose agenda is to keep the American public as ignorant and distracted as they can, and they're succeeding. They control the majority of the public fora, TV, terrestrial radio, print. On the other side, there's us, truth seekers, the reality-based community, we who deal in facts. Our voice is small when compared to the right-wing neocon propaganda machine, but we can never be accused of being hypocrites or liars. And make no mistake, I have no patience for right-wingers. They're part of the problem, and those ignorant fools who act like sheep, believing everything they're told, cannot be saved. They will have to reach their own moment of seeing the light without me. Senator Obama's message of coming together to achieve solutions is probably the only way he can appeal to all Americans. After he gets in office, he should allow all manner of investigations to be done so that Americans can learn the truth of how much damage the other side has done to this country. Liberal and not ashamed of it, Brandon from Brooklyn. That is a fitting note on which to end tonight's program. Thank you very kindly, Brandon. Thanks also to John Fox and Peter Godbold, our chief engineer and chief IT professionals, respectively. Thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, who makes all the streams go, sets up the archives and the podcasts. He needs your help. Even if you don't support this program, but you do support Guy, Ben needs your help, because Ben makes all of it happen. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Joining Coal River Mountain Watch is a means by which you can become a part of the solution that brings an end to mountaintop removal. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.